This is CICK News. Good day, and welcome to CICK News with your hosts, me, Dan Messick.
And me, Chris Giroux.
CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com. And we are broadcasting from the unceded Gidimden Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation.
Our top story today, I speak with Matthew Cook, the union rep for the Bulkley Valley Teachers Union. He gives us a rundown on their meeting that they had on Monday and the concerns the teachers are highlighting with back to school coming up in September. But first, headlines with Dan.
All right, thanks, Chris. First, we start off with the police beat. Police were on the scene of a fatal collision near Smithers on Thursday, August 13th. Smithers RCMP arrived at the scene at 3:15 p.m. to respond to a collision on Highway 16 near Babine Lake Road. Emergency service were called to the scene of the collision involving what was initially reported to be a motorcycle and a pickup truck. When officers arrived on the scene, they determined that the collision had in fact been between a pickup truck and a cyclist. The cyclist, a 41-year-old Smithers man, was pronounced dead on the scene. The highway was closed for a while to examine the condition of the road, and an investigation is ongoing. Anybody who has witnessed or possibly has dash cam of the incident are asked to call Smithers RCMP at 250-847-3233. On the same note, there was a single vehicle collision in Terrace that claimed the life of one person. That happened the day before on August 12th. Terrace RCMP were called to the scene of the single vehicle collision on Highway 16, just east of Terrace. Commercial vehicle was empty. It was an empty flatbed and had gone off the road and down an embankment. The driver, the lone occupant of the semi, was pronounced dead on the scene. The investigation is ongoing, and factors of the collision are not yet known. The BC Coroner Service is also conducting a parallel investigation to determine the cause of the death on the highway. The highway was also shut down for a short time. And again, RCMP and Terrace are asking anybody with any information or witnesses that may have seen the car or the truck go off the embankment are asked to call 250-638-7400. As well, we also saw a press release today coming from the Wet'suwet'en Access Point on Gidimden Territory. Apparently, they are claiming an alleged arson of one of their camps at the 27-kilometer turnoff on the Maurice River Forest Services Road. They claim that the arson took place on Saturday. However, RCMP have not issued any press release themselves. However, there are some major questions to be asked, and we will be looking into this situation in the coming weeks. Changing gears, you might have noticed that the skies have been leaking quite a bit this past summer, and it now is official coming from Environment Canada that this is the wettest summer on record for our region. We are looking at quite a lot of rain in the past few months, and definitely some places of note coming from data provided by Environment Canada. In Prince Rupert, they have seen a total of 250 millimeters of rain just in August alone. That's not including June and July. So 250 millimeters of rain just in August, and they will be seeing more in the coming days as they prepare to see some more rain taking place in Prince Rupert. And although they are known to have lots of rain in Prince Rupert, lots of precipitation in Prince Rupert, this is extremely high for this time of year especially. And here in Smithers, we also are seeing a huge increase in precipitation. Currently, we have reached about 50 millimeters of rain just in August as well. And so that coincides also with the coolest summer on record. Temperatures are at record lows for this time of year. And of course, we are not finished yet, and we should be seeing a little bit more rain into the coming days. But hopefully, according to Environment Canada, The rest of August and into September will be a little drier, and hopefully we'll see some more sun. And of course, you know what that means. Moving into September, it's also the new school year, and a lot of discussion, controversy about the COVID school year, as some people are calling it. But today, the provincial government outlined its requirements for masks to be worn in BC schools. The BC government announced that the updated operational guidelines on how to best keep schools and students, teachers, and staff safe. The masks will be required by staff of middle and secondary school students, as well as the students themselves in high traffic areas and, of course, on buses in common areas within the schools. The ministry is providing additional funding to school districts that will support the purchase of up to 1.5 million masks, enough for every public school staff member and student to have at least two masks. And and also in some circles, questions are being asked of what happens to these masks after they're done with them. Do they end up in landfills and garbage? That is still something that remains to be seen. However, Canadian Shield is donating an additional 54,000 masks for students that are in K-12. And of course, increased cleaning of high contact surfaces like doorknobs, keyboards, and desks, chairs will all be dealt with by staff. And it also will put more pressure on staff at the schools, cleaning staff at the schools. The province is providing an additional $45.6 million to the school districts to enhance cleaning and hand washing stations as well. And of course, school districts will communicate further details about their plans that will be posted by August 26th. And sticking with the COVID-19 response and also the trend that is ticking upward, on Friday, Chief Federal Health Official Dr. Theresa Tam said that they are expecting a resurgence of cases to take place in the fall, and that will coincide with flu season. And so she is preparing the country for an uptick in cases. We're already starting to see that curve start to go upward again. And of course, from today's update from the provincial government, we have seen a terrible milestone in this fight against COVID-19. 100 people tested positive over the weekend. That's Friday to mid-Saturday, and that is the highest increase in a single day here in BC since the pandemic began. From the midday Saturday to midday Sunday, there were 88 cases that were recorded here in BC. 48 of them were in the most recent 24 hours, and it brings BC's total to 236 new cases over 3 days, a massive increase. Two more people have also died because of the virus, and it brings the province's total deaths to 198. Currently, we still have only one new case here in the Northern Health Region. However, most of the new cases took place in the Fraser Health Region, and now BC sits at a total number of cases of 4,594, with about 3,600 people now in recovery. Chris, back to you.
So we have about 3 weeks with these numbers going up to figure out how we're going to go to school and then plan for a huge increase in cases throughout the fall, pretty much guaranteed by the BC health officer, the federal health officer. There's a lot of questions, and we do have an interview with the teacher's rep here in Smithers. They were going to meet the school district on Monday, and the school district is directed by the province to come up with that plan with, of course, the guidelines and financial help. Things like two masks given to students, there's 5 days a week that they go to school. Are they supposed to wash it every day? I'm not quite sure what's going on there. I know a lot of teachers were asking about face shields. That was brought up by Matthew Cook, the teacher rep. I just am kind of curious where we're going to be come November. I know in September, everyone is full steam ahead on opening the schools. October, November, December, as we come up to the Christmas break, I do really wonder if we're going back to the reality of learning from home, because everyone's got COVID fatigue, especially people in their 20s. The cases are going up, and they will continue to go up as far as I can tell, because more things are opening up. Recreation centers, schools, I don't see them going down. And if we shut down the entire global economy in April for fewer cases than we have now, I just, I, I don't see the very bright horizon coming in September. But maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong, right? Yeah. But the precautions that we're taking, Dr. Bonnie Henry pointed out, masks are at the bottom of that pyramid of importance. It's great that they have the, you know, ability to have these masks. But that's just not going to solve when you're in a group of 120 kids or whatever, anything. I mean, and then you can go to the pool, the grocery store, the bowling just opened up. I'm pretty excited about that, actually. I think I can get away with without spreading any virus there. They have these neat partitions up and everything, but
got to wipe down the balls.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, no, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I just do not see this working out come 2 or 3 months from now.
Yeah, definitely very concerning issues, especially what we're seeing already in the States. You know, some of the states have opened up schools for the summer school season to begin. And right away, massive increases in cases and coming directly from, you know, teenage age students in high schools. So again, they don't know what they're going to do to clamp down on this, how to keep people safe. Some discussions going on in Ontario about doing one day on, one day off. But it really does look like the online learning will probably take precedence. Also, you know, one thing that we aren't hearing a ton about at the moment is with universities. High schools, elementary schools is one thing, but with universities, there's a huge, huge financial loss that they're now facing. And these are universities across the board. Many of them depend on international student tuition to pay for a lot of the budgets, huge budgets that these universities have. And now majority of them are not going to have any international students physically come in. So that money is lost to them trying to make up a percentage of their funds each year, and a lot of it going to online. However, even the domestic students are now calling foul on universities because they're paying these huge tuitions. And now everything seems to be going to be online. And so they're feeling that they're losing out on their education because of COVID. However, they're still paying the same amount. So there is a big financial loss.
That's right. And that online component is actually very harsh in a rural area like Smithers, the Bulkley Valley, the Northwest in general. There's a lot of people who don't have high-speed internet. People forget that. I know that they're buying up tablets, laptops for students, which is great, except you can't really use it if you don't have that, you know, internet component.
And, you know, don't want to belabor the issue because we want to get to this interview with Matthew Cook and kind of dig into some of these issues. But also, school is not just about the education and the technology. There's a social aspect involved. A lot of kids have been without seeing their friends at the end of last school season, as well as all through the summer now. And now it looks like they may be denied seeing their friends and having social interaction in the coming year. This is, I feel, a bigger impact to children of any age, teenagers or, you know, elementary age students. Much bigger impact on the social side of things.
And I think that's where you got to take Dr. Bonnie Henry's advice with your social bubbles. I would hope a lot of parents would take their kids into consideration with that. Yeah, maybe we'll miss our poker buddies, but maybe talk to other parents and work your social bubble around your kids so that they have that you know, social interaction and can actually see other children. Hopefully they can work something out. And I know, hey, bowling's an option. So there you go.
Well, let's get into this interview. Yeah, so you spoke with Matthew Cook.
Yeah, and he brought up a lot of these particular topics, and he goes in depth about the concerns teachers have and the solutions they're trying to find with the school district. But of course, that big announcement with their grand plan the province had about opening up schools, the BC Teachers Federation came out and said, "We don't think you're ready yet." They were not on board. Let's hear from Matthew and hear what he had to say. Okay, I'm here today with Matthew Cook. He's the union representative in the school district for Bulkley Valley, School District 54. Matthew, you're meeting with the school district on Monday. Can you tell me what kind of concerns or priorities you're bringing to them and how you'd like to work together with the school district?
Thanks, Chris, for the opportunity. Yes, so Monday, the president of our local QP and myself and the school district will meet for the first time to look at a pandemic protocol document that I'm sure they're going to present to us. And what I'm hoping for is for an opportunity for real deep collaboration, both on that document as well on how we can support members in feeling safe in returning back to the schools and back to working with kids. And then obviously the parallel to that is how kids can be safe within those, within the schools.
Now, that's of course generally, I think, what everybody is hoping for. Are there any specifics that you saw missing from, say, the provincial general guidelines that they gave to school districts that you would like to make sure that the school district brings up? I'm thinking personal protection wear. I'm thinking plans for sick days. What happens when somebody has, a positive test? That sort of thing.
So in the spring, all of this was very new, and I would say we were in a reactive response situation. The fact that we have had what the ministry and the district and teachers called a trial run in June, and then the 2 months through the summer, should mean that we have an opportunity to do sufficient and thorough planning to get all of those things organized, lined up, the details hammered out, but then a real deep sense of clarity for everybody involved about, so for example, face masks. In the spring, that was less certain about whether face masks would be allowed, whether they would be encouraged, whether they were mandatory. The ministry has since changed in their July 29th announcement that not only would face masks be permitted, while they aren't mandatory, that's very clear from Dr. Henry, they will be permitted, and the ministry has set aside, I don't recall the number, 20-something million dollars for PPE, and I believe it's also intended to be earmarked for cleaning and custodial support, which is fabulous. So protective personal equipment, yes, I think on Monday one of the questions will be how do teachers access this? What is the type of mask that teachers could access? I've heard 72 hours is a reasonable time for one mask to sit. So then will teachers be able to access multiple masks? I've had several teachers ask me about face shields. So masks do a certain amount of protection. Dr. Henry repeatedly talks about layers of protection, PPE, physical distancing, hand hygiene, and keeping your cohort small. We can come to that in a minute. But the face shields protect your any aerosolized, I guess, virus from going into your eyes. So then is the ministry and will the district be supporting teachers in accessing face shields if they choose? Is the district providing students face masks if the students wish it, or is that just an expectation that parents will provide it? I think that detail is going to be quite important. Monday's meeting will also raise questions around, so for example, if a teacher has symptoms, we've been clearly told by Horgan and Fleming and Dr. Henry that we should not be going to work. No employee in any sector should be going to work if they're sick. So what structures are there for teachers who have a symptom to stay at home? Are they drawing off their personal sick days? Is there an opportunity for them to access COVID sick days, which don't draw on their personal sick days? If we have someone who has no sick days banked, TTOCs or a brand new teacher, that would potentially put them in an awkward position about, do I take an unpaid day or do I go in with a sniffle? Obviously, the response is don't go in with a sniffle. But if this is the new normal, then we need to ensure that there are opportunities for teachers to do the right thing without being penalized for it. Rolling along, the idea of a teacher who has underlying health issues. So what is the district and the ministry's response to a teacher who requests an accommodation? Whether that's extra personal PPE above and beyond, whether that's being able to work meaningfully from home. There are, we found in May and June as we entered into stage three, that this hybrid model of some kids in class in front of you and some kids on their computers at home created an enormous, I believe, an unexpected workload burden for teachers trying to run a parallel program. Because if you have, so I'm new to the BVTU president's job. So in last year, I was a grade 4, 5, 6 teacher at Muheim Elementary. And I had, once kids were coming back, I had on average between, say, 5 and 7, 5 and 8 students per day. And that was in on a Monday, Wednesday, I had the same group. On a Tuesday, Thursday, I had the same group. So then I would teach the Monday group, and then I would teach them again on Wednesday. I'd teach the Tuesday group, and I'd teach them again on Thursday. But that that was only 50, 60% of my student load. So I still had 40% of my students at home, and I had there was an expectation that I maintain online learning for them. So I'm teaching two sets of students in person and maintaining an online teaching presence throughout the week. Our situation in the spring was that, well, you could do your online component on Friday. That won't be the case now. So a workload issue becomes extremely important. Tie that back to the teachers who may be requesting for accommodations. There's a way for teachers who need accommodations to work remotely to support teachers and students who may end up having to be in an online setting because perhaps the student has underlying health concerns. And so the family decides that it's not appropriate for them to be at school, but they still need to be.
So you see a solution here, both for the teachers who may want to be working from home and students who want to be learning from home, versus splitting that time with teachers who are trying to teach in the classroom and teach online.
So provincially and locally, this idea of the workload, an enormous workload increase in May and June, does need a solution. And I think, again, we've had these 2 months through the summer to come up with solutions. I think there are many ways that we can support teachers, again, who may require accommodations. We haven't talked yet about TTOCs, our teachers on call, our substitute teachers. They're in an awkward position because typically we have a school district of 7 schools. Typically, a TTOC could be in one school on Monday, a different school on Tuesday. This cohort model that was a surprise announcement on July 29th by the minister means that we want, I think there's a need to restrict the number of random people who are in contact with a cohort of students or a class of students. So then we don't want TTOCs running around the 7 schools in the district, and if you have a district with more than 7 schools, then running around to 20, 30 different schools over the course of a month. I think there are solutions. Again, this meeting on Monday with the district, I'm hoping that we have this opportunity for, as I said, a deep collaboration. Let's look at the details that were problematic in May and June and try together to come up with solutions that meet my members' needs, the teachers of the Bulkley Valley, as well as CUPE's needs, because many of these problems become issues for custodians or school staff secretaries, let's say, who move to different schools. these are going to be similar problems. My guess is that the solutions can work for several different contexts.
So the cohort solution, I guess, that the province put forward, different numbers for different ages of kids, but the idea is that these smaller groups versus the entire school are going to be kind of put together so there's less mixing. Say someone gets infected in one cohort, you can control that more than if one person in the entire school gets infected. You had brought the problem up of, you know, having substitute teachers, that sort of person. You don't want people to mix within the cohorts. But generally, the cohort idea, do you kind of understand what the province is trying to do there? Because it's not necessarily you stick with your classmates, right? It's different grades. It's the way that it will work is that the idea is just a certain population of the school in general use areas. Recess, lunchtime, that kind of thing. They stick together and aren't supposed to mingle, I guess, with other cohorts. Did you see that as something that will be working, is workable for teachers? And do you see maybe a tweaking of that, or is that just, is it working the right way, or will it work the right way, do you think?
So the cohort learning group model was a bit of a surprise announcement on July 29th. It was one of the reasons why the BCTF came out almost immediately saying that there is much more work to be done before this plan can be implemented. So the cynic in me says that the cohort and learning group model is about contact tracing, and I'll be quite blunt that when COVID shows up in a school, I think we can all accept that the likelihood of 60 school districts and however many hundreds of thousands of students, COVID will come up. This is a risk and reward calculation. And the obviously from the government and the PHO's perspective, the risk isn't outweighed by the reward. The cohort model, I believe, in to shift from cynic to being somewhat optimistic, I think the cohort model is intended to reduce the number of students who, from the ministry's perspective, can be within close contact of each other, still maintaining some marginal degree of physical distancing, which I think is perhaps something we should come back to in a minute. So in K to 7, our district is a K to 7 and then an 8 to 12 district. So from K to 7, the cohort is 60. And from 8 to 12 in the high schools, the cohort numbers are 120. So if we think about this for a minute, in May, June, we had, say, 40% of our elementary school. I was teaching at Muheim, so our elementary school showing up. We did a remarkable job, everybody in the building, administration, teachers, QP, did a remarkable job of staggering the start time. Each class was given a 10-minute window where kids showed up. They stood in hula hoops. After 10 minutes, teachers brought their group in. The next group showed up. They stood in hula hoops. They came in. And that took either 3 or 4 windows like that. So that's a 30 or a 40 minute scheduling reality in order to get kids in small groups. My guess is, and again, this cohort model is something that's going to require significant conversations, hopefully collaboration between the unions and the district in order to come up with a system that's going to function. So that, and as you said, that includes recess. So then you've got staggered times for recess, so you limit the number of kids outside at once, staggered times for lunch, and then staggered times for exit. Although, I don't know how the exiting is going to work, because we have, at Muheim, something like 40% of our kids get on buses. So the bus issue becomes a complication in how you create a solution around staggered entry and staggered exit. It doesn't mean there isn't a solution, but it's something that will need to be worked out. The cohort model, the 60 students and 120 students at high school is a maximum. If I'm a classroom teacher and I decide I'm just going to keep my class to myself and I'm not going to choose to work with another class, then for the majority of the day, I can keep my cohort whatever my class size limit is.
That becomes a little harder in high school, though, when you have electives.
So the complications at the elementary school around cohorts and learning groups are going to be significant. The complications at high school, as you say, when you have kids taking, in a semestered school, taking four courses with a variety of electives, I like to think I'm a solution-oriented professional. I can't picture what those solutions are going to be.
Would changing the semester system help? Because I know there's talk about going to four terms or something like that.
So there is a quarter semester approach that some districts are looking at. And so instead of four courses for half a year and then another four courses to a total of eight, you do two courses every 10 weeks. And that's one course Monday to Friday, first thing, and then one course Monday to Friday after lunch. I haven't heard yet how our district is contemplating approaching the learning group 120 limit at the high schools. I do know that in a passing conversation with the superintendent, he said that HSS numbers, the Houston secondary numbers, are quite small, and possibly that is going to be easier to manage around cohort groups. Whereas the population of students at Smithers Secondary is going to be much harder. And again, that will be part of our conversation on Monday, I'm hoping.
Have you seen other jurisdictions, either inside BC or outside BC, that could be used as examples, like kind of pulling ideas from other areas?
Specifically to cohort size, no.
In general, is anything that you were impressed by so far? Thinking Ontario's come out with a plan. I know Manitoba just came out with a plan. A lot of it, of course, is surrounding physical distancing, which you want to speak about again. Have you seen any sort of solutions in that area?
I'd like to address the physical distancing first. So if I'm speaking on behalf of teachers in the Bulkley Valley, I think the number one question that they have is, how is it that every other employment sector has quite strict guidelines around physical distancing? So, for example, you walk into BV Wholesale and they have plexiglass, workers wear masks, physical distancing, they've got arrows on the ground. So when we shift to the education sector, it does seem like there's a contradiction when we move to you can have up to 60 kids in a relatively small space indoors. There is no other part of our society right now where 60 kids can be together inside. A wedding, a funeral, a concert. It just doesn't exist. And so I think teachers really struggle with this contradiction between the messages from the PHO and the ministry, all of the ministries, saying you need to physical distance, you need to keep your social groups low. If you are going to be with people, then try and be outside. And that does seem to create anxiety within teachers as we think about how on earth is this going to work within our schools. And I think in a way this comes back to the risk and reward. There are a number of risks. Some of those can be mitigated, but the rewards in the calculation, I think, appear to outweigh the risks. In terms of other jurisdictions, I think what we're finding as you look around Sweden, Norway, if you look at jurisdictions within the United States, that initial efforts to keep kids and staff safe seem to be insufficient. And I think it was why the ministry really wanted this trial run in June. And so there were definitely benefits to that. It highlighted some serious problems that needed to be corrected for September.
Speaking of trials, will that first week, because they just announced a couple days ago, there's going to be more orientation, it's not just straight back to school, will that first week actually help instead of just going back to school on September 8th? Were you able to implement some sort of plan or a trial before you actually get going?
So one of the questions on Monday with the superintendent, our district calendar has Tuesday the 8th as a professional development day. We have six of those throughout the year, and they are intended for teachers to develop their profession. So your question about the delayed start, it seems that it would be a good idea to think about shifting that professional development day, because those 2 days is what the ministry has now said, that the 8th and the 9th will be teachers only, and then some sort of a staggered re-entry for kids to understand protocols, to create your cohort groups. So those 2 days are going to be essential. I'm hoping that the ministry hears the outcry from the BCTF, from teachers, from parent groups. The BC Principal and Vice Principals Association came out saying we need to delay the start. What I'm not sure most of your listeners might understand is while teachers take a break through the summer, many of them are working on lesson plans, unit plans. If they've changed schools, if they've changed grades or subject areas, they are rethinking what they teach and how they teach. But technically, our contracts don't begin until the day after Labor Day. So most teachers won't be in the building. Most won't have an opportunity to talk to their principals. Teachers won't have had an opportunity to collaborate on, say, at the elementary school, who would it make sense for me to pair with to create my learning group? What are our protocols for cleaning? What are our physical distancing protocols? So those 2 days become essential. And again, I'm hoping that perhaps the ministry sees fit to give us a day or two more.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you're packing in a lot of stuff in a couple of days, figuring out a lot of things very quickly. Is that something you really think that the BCTF wants to push for, I guess?
So a few years ago, the BCTF had an ad campaign, and it was, students' learning conditions are teachers' working conditions. I think in the time of COVID, that's really important for us all to remember. So saying that the BCTF or indeed the BVTU may be lobbying for a few extra days in that first week to really understand how we can keep teachers and students safe, that seems like a really good use of time. This is, as we talked about with the 120 students in a learning group at the high school level, this is incredibly complicated. Just try and imagine your teenage child going into a high school, having class 1 in the morning, going into the hallways. Are we staggering those hallway breaks? That has a ripple effect on every teacher's class start time and end time. You and I may be in the same Science 10 class. That doesn't mean our next block is going to be the same. Again, the level of complexity around possibly rescheduling, possibly trying to come up with movement systems so that kids can try and create some distance from each other is incredibly complicated. We haven't talked about proper use of PPE or any of the other systems and protections that need to be in place for teachers and for students.
And this is all taking into consideration that the numbers are going to be relatively low, the curve will be relatively flat, we'll be able to control outbreaks in schools. I'm worried about come November, December, what do you see as the line where things got to shut down again? Because a second wave is guaranteed by all medical professionals, epidemiologists say it will happen. How far can it go before teachers need to say that's enough, students need to say that's enough, everyone just needs to go home and try to figure out another way to, I guess, keep learning?
That is a brilliant question. The challenge lies in the multi-party, multi-voice group that's making these decisions about education. The PHO has influence over the policies and the programs that get put in place in K-12 education. The ministry gets involved. I don't think we have this five-stage plan for K-12 education. The premier at one point said it's not going to be a switch. He said this in May or June, that it's not going to be a switch rotating, shifting between stage two and stage three. But I think that would really comfort families and teachers a great deal if we had some indication of what's the threshold to shift from stage two to stage three. What's the threshold to shift back to a 100% in-person, everybody's fine approach to education?
There isn't a clear outline when it comes to that, other than everything's back to normal after there's a vaccine and everyone's vaccinated. But until that happens, which who knows when that'll happen, there is, I guess, no clear sense. So you'll just be keeping an eye on the public health office on, you know, what happens as the numbers grow this winter, this fall, and just, I guess, is that all you can do, is just kind of keep an eye on where the public health officials are? And
I think so. And the amount of time that we've had to plan for this current stage for a September restart, which it, again, if we go back to the July 29th announcement, there the ministry had made changes in that five-stage plan. That was a surprise to darn near every stakeholder group that was involved in the planning of that. The stage we were in June was had density caps, so up to 50% in K-7. But those density numbers were changed at the last minute. So notwithstanding those changes, we have had a significant amount of time to think, and we still have more time to plan for a September restart. But your question is really important, because we haven't yet talked about what happens in a second wave. We haven't done planning, at least that I'm aware of. Now, there are a fair number of working groups at the provincial level. The BCTF plays a significant part in that, as do other stakeholders in conjunction with the ministry. Those working groups then share information to a steering committee. And it's possible that those working groups in the steering committee have been thinking about what does happen if we hit a second wave. I'm not aware of those conversations yet. But if we have to shift back to a 50% only in a building at one time, or indeed if we have to switch to where we were in kind of mid to late March, where no students are in the school, that is another layer of planning that will require a significant effort on everybody's part.
So that's something to look forward to in the future. I'm looking also at September and just the planned start date. Teachers have a lot of power here and a lot of sway, I think it was important that the BCTF came out and said we're not ready when the province came out with its education plan. Is it even guaranteed that we're going back to school in September?
Well, I think guarantees in a global pandemic are well above my pay grade. I think what I can say, again, based on what I've heard from the ministry, is that September 8th will have us in one of the five stages of a K-12 restart. And that, again, is everything from completely and 100% online, because we have had a massive spike in cases, all the way to there was a vaccine, we have herd immunity, whichever, and we're all back and everything's fine. So will school restart in September? I think I can confidently say yes. Specifically what that looks like, again, is above my pay grade. We are planning for a return of students. The current number is 100% K-12 with all of the levels of protection that can reasonably be put in place, which, just to recap, is physical distancing, which is complicated. Physical distancing in a small room with 20 plus, 25 plus kids, one teacher, perhaps an EA, other specialists who may be coming in and out of the room, is a very hard, that is incredibly hard to create appropriate physical distancing, which is why I'm very pleased that there has been a shift in terms of masks being available, not discouraged, that masks are hopefully will be available to students. But physical distancing is going to be a huge challenge. Hopefully the new money from the ministry for PPE, that also includes increased custodial time for cleaning. And hopefully those are increases in time, perhaps a daytime custodian on top of whatever the regular custodian shifts are after school. That would be a terrific improvement. The cohort model, I think there's lots of work to be done in the next few weeks prior to September 8th. Again, I'm grateful that we have the 2 days at the beginning of the school year for all staff to acquaint themselves, be taught how to implement all of these protocols so that students and teachers can be safe.
Well, we all hope the teachers and students are safe and that everything can be controlled as much as it could be. Thanks for your time, Matthew. I guess we'll find out next week how everything works out as we get closer to the school year. And on September 8th, and then later the next week, we'll actually find out what school's going to look like. So thank you for your time.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Chris.
And we're back. CSCK 939, the voice of the Valley, CSCK News. And that was our interview with Matthew Cook. Chris, a lot of things going on. Obviously, the Teachers Federation, the union, not very happy with the way plans seem to be falling into place. And they have a lot of concerns going forward about safety. You know, I guess kind of what's your takeaways and what should people keep in mind if they're getting their kids or teachers themselves getting prepared to go back to school? It's only a few weeks away.
These teachers are putting their lives on the line. I mean, some of them are in the high risk categories.
Yeah.
And that was one of those questions that Matthew had, was can they have that option to not go to the school? Maybe there'll be the online component. The thing that really struck me, the biggest one, was when he pointed out there's no other workplace that is forcing their workers to be in such large groups without physical distancing, without any sort of the safeguards that are demanded, and places are shut down if they don't follow this. You point out the grocery store, the restaurants, you get shut down if you're not socially distancing. Whereas with the schools, the teachers are being told, well, we'll do the best we can. We're going to limit the risk, but you're going to have to go and into these large groups of dozens, if not hundreds of students. So it's a risk. I'm just hoping that the teachers can be safe, the students can be safe, all the staff that are there, they can figure some things out where they can get an education in that important social aspect, and nobody has to actually die for it.
Just to touch upon that issue of education and pandemics, did a little bit of preliminary research, kind of looking at the same situation that was dealt with the Spanish flu about 100 years ago. And the U.S. schools, Canadian schools, as well as Europe, were all closed down for a period of time. But when they did realize that this would be more of a medium-term situation, that they'd have to live with the pandemic for some time, they adapted. And with school, they adapted, one, to have nurses in the schools, to have actual designated nurses that were at the schools ready to deal with any sort of situation that came up, whether it was to bring masks around or to administer some sort of medical advice to students. They had on-call nurses stationed at schools. Another issue that they tried to overcome was to ensure that there were these, you know, distancing, these ideas of being safe as possible. possible within the schools, where you limit the amount of people in the school, you limit the amount of time that they're there. And then also on the same line of thinking, outdoor classes. When they could, they were able to set up outdoor classrooms so they could have that distance, so they could have that ventilation. A lot of questions being asked about the ventilation in some of these schools. Some of these schools are pretty old and don't have the adequate ventilation. And that's a big issue with the way that COVID-19 kind of transmits, as well as making sure that there's airflow. And so those two things, making sure that there's some sort of medical professional on location, on standby to give advice, as well as to have outdoor classrooms. You know, it's been done before, and it looks like, especially in this situation where we have, or this location rather, where we have a smaller population, we could probably do that. We have a lot of open spaces. There's a big field there at the high school. It possibly could be done that way. But again, we're not really having those conversations. At least the province isn't really talking much about that. We kind of want to go back to this normal that we had of education. But again, for some time, it looks like we're going to be dealing with a pandemic, and it seems like we need to adapt to that reality. And there are ways to adapt. Mind you, of course, you know, we deal with very cold winters, long winters here. So
winter.
So that, you know, might be an issue. But to augment that with online learning, as well as coming into the classroom, whether it would be to break up the week, so you're in the classroom maybe a couple of days, offset, you know, as they were doing towards the end of last school season, you offset the days. So, you know, grade one and two in on the Monday, grades two and three in on the Tuesday, something like that. But again, the teachers union calling foul on a lot of these issues.
Yeah, those are ideas that they practiced in June when they came back for a couple of weeks. And Matthew did speak about how they did learn lessons from that. Just the amount of time it takes for kids to get off the bus. They had to wait in hula hoops and, you know, orderly go in. The outdoor classroom thing, going only a couple of days. This is up to the school districts, although it seems like the province is directing them. They want the 5 days a week. They want that normal, quote unquote, normal school experience as close as they could get. But I think you're right. I don't think that's going to last long. I really do think they'll have to come up with some creative solutions. And hopefully between the union and the school district and you know, the administration, they can all figure it out. I think outside's great. We're tough Northerners. We'll survive.
Let's get a couple of heaters. You'll be fine.
It'll be kind of interesting to learn chemistry and physics outside. But hey,
frostbite is good for you.
It'd be creative. It's a chance for teachers to, you know, maybe just play with the environment that you're in and learn from it. So
yeah, I guess one thing is that we are going to be dealing with this for some time, and we need to start getting creative with solutions. But again, we'll see what happens within a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am looking forward to when things can return to a time when we're not afraid of what germs are on people. You know, I'll keep washing my hands, I guess, but
always.
Other than that, I guess that's our show. Thank you to Matthew Cook, and we will be following up with the school district to see what kind of solutions they're coming up with, because it's coming up fast, and parents are relying on this. They have to go to work, and the kids got to go somewhere, so we'll definitely find out what things are going to look like in September. So thanks for listening, everybody. Check us out on CICK News Facebook page. Give us your comments, your ideas, anything and everything. And do share the podcast on your favorite podcast app with anyone and everyone, especially this episode, where I think everyone's going to be affected by the, you know, what's happening with schools. The economy really relies on those kids getting to school. So thanks for listening.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. We will continue to broadcast remotely and give you the latest updates on the COVID-19 pandemic and other news affecting Northern BC. And if you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, please contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook. And while you're there, fill out our short survey to help us serve you better. New episodes of CICK News are now available for download on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out what other local stations are doing across Canada by visiting canada-info.ca. You'll find our station's posts and other media deserts from across the country, sponsored by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada. CICK News is hosted by me, Dan Messick, and Chris Gouraud, and is produced by Pam Hassan. Thanks for listening.